You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Has Governor Snyder's team partnered with Enbridge Energy in deciding the fate of Line 5? That's the question explored in a joint investigation by Bridge Magazine and the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. And before we dig into this, a reminder, Enbridge Energy is a corporate sponsor of Michigan Radio. Craig Mauger, executive director for the MCFN, and Jim Malowitz, the environment reporter for Bridge, co-authored this report, and they are with us now. Welcome to both of you.
Hey there.
Thanks.
So in 2 months of digging through more than 5,700 documents that you got through the Freedom of Information Act, you found a number of interwoven relationships between the Snyder administration and Enbridge. So I want to start where you start, which was the state's press release last November announcing an agreement between the Snyder administration and Enbridge. Jim, remind us just what the governor announced and what was in that agreement.
Sure. This was a pretty sweeping agreement that set up a series of studies for Enbridge to complete regarding the risks along Line 5 and some options for whether to swap it out or address those risks. And it also required Enbridge to replace a segment of Line 5, which doesn't run just below the Straits of Mackinac. It also runs across a wide swath of Michigan. It required Enbridge to swap out a section below the St. Clair River. And so it was really setting the state on a path to ultimately decide the fate of the pipeline, which should be coming next month.
And I remember when we talked about this last fall, last November on Stateside, I remember that was the Governor Snyder's declaration. Business as usual was not acceptable from Enbridge.
Correct. Yeah. There have been some consternation about whether Enbridge was shielding information about the condition of Line 5 below the Straits, and a lot of statements of outrage against the company publicly for withholding that information.
So, Craig, who got a preview of the news release and state's talking points?
Yeah, according to the emails that we were able to obtain, it appears, of course, and you can check the emails out in the stories if you visit our websites online, it appears that one of the high-ranking state officials, quote, went over the press release with one of Enbridge's lobbyists before releasing it to the public. And also, the state provided a couple of Enbridge representatives with a copy of the talking points, with a question and answer document. So those are kind of internal documents that shaped how the state was going to spin this agreement. And they gave those to Enbridge in advance, and Enbridge kind of responded by giving the state some of its public relations talking points for when the agreement was announced. So there was definitely a collaboration on how this was going to be presented to the public.
In fact, in your story, there's an email from this official state energy director, Valerie Brader, to Enbridge lobbyist Deborah Muchmore, and we should point out, who is married to Governor Snyder's former chief of staff, Dennis Muchmore. And in the email, Brader says, if you see anything you think is incorrect or misleading, please let us know. Now, you spoke with people who have worked for the state in the past. What was their take on that, Craig?
Yeah, they basically, you know, it was almost completely everyone was saying the same thing, that it is not unusual to give a regulated company a copy of a press release that may affect them in advance. That's not unusual. What would be unusual was it would be giving them a press release and then allowing them to provide feedback on areas that weren't simply relevant to facts. Like, this is factually incorrect, or this needs to be changed because it's just not right. The former DEQ employee said, you know, that would be kind of normal, but allowing anyone to say, well, I don't like the way you've worded this line and I don't like the way this sounds, that would be very unusual. And it's unclear at this point what kind of communication took place, other than we know that Valerie Brader, the former director of the energy agency, basically said, let us know if anything is misleading, which that caught a couple people's eyes as well.
Jim, what other examples can you tell us about that you found of state officials kind of letting people with direct ties to Enbridge have some input into state decisions about Line 5?
Sure. We had a combination of people with direct ties to Enbridge and lobbyists in general. I mean, you mentioned earlier that Enbridge's top lobbyist in the state is Deborah Muchmore, who was married to Snyder's former chief of staff. But also, we found some interesting things regarding Valerie Brader, who was the state's energy chief until earlier this year. She left that job to pursue a private sector job that advertises its services to energy companies who need consulting. And now the state has hired her back as a consultant on Line 5 and paying her $375 an hour. So that's another example that kind of stood out.
And there's several others I know that you look at a former advisory board, because certainly the Pipeline Safety Advisory Board has a role in state decisions, or is supposed to have a role in state decisions about Line 5. Guy Meadows, right, led a team through Michigan Tech. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Guy Meadows is kind of the leader of this team that's led by Michigan Tech that is now going to be doing an analysis of risk involving Line 5. And when they made their proposal to get the contract to do this, they disclosed potential conflicts that involved doing a lot of projects for Enbridge previously, and they listed these as potential conflicts of interest. But in the proposal document, they stated that, you know, Guy Meadows basically stated that when he was appointed to the Pipeline Safety Board, the state knew about this and didn't see that it warranted him not being on the advisory board. So that was pretty interesting as well.
And to be clear, too, you know, our story isn't suggesting any untoward relationship between Meadows and the state. And he has said, you know, it's up for the public to decide whether there's a conflict there. And he was very open about it. But it's particularly interesting that the state knew that there had been some crossover between Meadows' projects with Enbridge and the state, because that contract was something the state signed after they nixed another contract with a firm that had disclosed partway through that they had done projects for Enbridge. And the state very loudly said that we don't want this conflict. So it was kind of replacing one contract with a potential conflict for another one.
So what about the Pipeline Safety Advisory Board? Did it have any role in that November 2017 agreement between Enbridge and the state? What'd you find out, Jim?
Yeah, that was a really interesting development that we kind of go into a little bit in the story, is that the Pipeline Safety Board was not happy. Some of its members were not happy that they didn't have a role in giving say or having input on this agreement that the state reached in November with Enbridge. So at least one of the board members we talked to was seemed pretty frustrated with the fact that the state had done all of this activity to share information with Enbridge, but hadn't shared any of this information with at least some members of the Pipeline Safety Advisory Board that is supposed to be there to, you know, advise the state on what to do about these pipelines. So that is a really fascinating element of this.
Now, in the emails that you dug through, did you find any case where Enbridge directly suggested the kinds of actions the state should take, Craig?
I mean, there were 5,000 emails. From the best of my knowledge, I saw no email that featured Enbridge telling the state, you need to do this or you have to do this. I mean, suggestion is kind of a vague word. I think early on they might have suggested some things, but I didn't see anything that raised alarms in my mind, like Enbridge is dictating what's going to happen here. I did not see that. And I should say as well, the state is in a very tricky position with this. For one reason, Enbridge has access to all of this information regarding the pipeline, and they have the expertise on pipelines that maybe the state doesn't have. So they're often the state has to rely on Enbridge for certain elements of information. And in another way, this is tricky for the state because Enbridge has so many connections to so many people, because it's such a large company, that it is difficult to find people who aren't connected to them in one way or another.
Jim Malowitz, in your story, you spell out some actions that the state took to reduce conflicts of interest in decisions involving Line 5. What are those?
Well, one of the main ones is that in some of the studies that Enbridge had to complete, including looking at the viability of potentially putting a tunnel around a new section of Line 5 and swapping out the old one, the state paid a pair of outside experts to oversee that study. So the idea was, yes, Enbridge is doing this study, and a lot of people at the time when it was announced, you know, suggested, is the study going to be fair and impartial? And the state is paying other folks to oversee that.
How did these folks respond to your reporting? Governor Snyder's office, the DEQ, Valerie Brader, the advisory board, there are many, many movable parts in this story. How did they react to this story?
Well, there are a lot of different elements to the story that are explored. So, I mean, different people responded in different ways. The DEQ answered the questions that we had to a certain extent. We sent them a list of questions, and they answered many of them. A couple of the questions they refused to answer and just gave maybe a one-word answer and didn't want to go into detail. Some of the things, some of the, you know, the lobbying firm that's been working for Enbridge, they provided some answers. I mean, I think for the most part, people answered the questions that we had to the best of their ability. The governor's office has directed a lot of the questions to the departments that are actually in charge of this, I would say.
And I would say the state's overall response is that they're basically echoing what they've said throughout this process. They're saying that we're the ones making the decisions, and we're trying to create a transparent process. And I guess it was our goal in reporting to give readers all of the information we had in regards to what might be going on behind the scenes.
And then, Jim, and just remind us what we watch for, what's coming up at the end of this summer.
Right. Governor Snyder has said that in August, he's going to make kind of a final determination on Line 5's fate. And it's looking like, and I know y'all have done reporting on this, that he likes the idea of replacing that section of Line 5 beneath the Straits with something that's protected in a tunnel buried maybe 100 feet below the lake bed, which will be a pretty expensive project that'll take years to complete. That's what Enbridge has said is feasible for the Straits. But we're going to find out for sure what Snyder wants to go with.
Craig Mauger and Jim Malowitz, their story, Emails Cast Out About Michigan's Ties to Enbridge in Line 5 Debate. It is a long read, certainly worth your time at bridgemi.com. Thank you so much to both of you for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you.